From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. I'm Elizabeth Piccicelli. I'm an author, speaker, radio host, and voiceover artist, filling in for Michael O'Neill today. I've been a frequent guest on the show. I've hosted for him before. I'm always delighted to be here in his stead. And Michael and I have also worked together on some EWTN television specials, one on The Miracle of Lourdes, which aired in February, and another one on St. Therese of Lisieux that's going to be coming up in the fall. And that's always fun to do that. Both St. Bernadette and St. Therese are some of my spiritual girlfriends that I write about in my book, Therese, Faustina, and Bernadette, three saints who challenged my faith, gave me hope, and taught me how to love. And you can find out more about my writing, media, and speaking at elizabethficicelli.com. This week, Michael O'Neill is in Poland. He's over there filming the next season of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs on EWTN on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. And he's going to be going to the Shrine of Divine Mercy, the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and the Gierszewald Marian Apparition Site, which is the only Vatican-approved Marian Apparition Site in Poland. So we wish him safe and inspired travels. Remember tonight, Saturday, April 29th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, be sure to watch Explore with the Miracle Hunter. The subject is Panman. You'll be traveling with the Miracle Hunter, Michael O'Neill himself, to Panman in France, where the Virgin Mary, under the title Our Lady of Hope, appeared to farm children and to an army precipitating the end of the Franco-Prussian War. And that is a 30-minute special, EWTN, tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. And now it's time for Miracle News. Just a few quick stories today. I just read this about a new miraculous spring. On April 14th, 2023, a new spring erupted forth next to a brand new chapel that was built in Medjugorje. It's claimed to have healing properties similar to Lourdes. And Medjugorje, of course, is a site of reported apparitions, neither approved nor condemned by the Catholic Church, and millions of pilgrims have flocked there since 1981. Also in the news, small fragments of wood believed to have been from the cross on which Jesus was crucified will be incorporated into King Charles' coronation. Two shards of what is known as the True Cross were gifted to King Charles by Pope Francis to celebrate the ceremony. The pieces have been fixed into a cross of Wales, a silver cross that will be carried into Westminster Abbey next month as part of the May 6th procession. And finally, a Marian shrine in rural northeast Wisconsin, the only shrine in the United States to be designated by the Catholic Church as an approved Marian apparition site, gets a new name and a new solemnity. During a press conference on April 20th, Green Bay Bishop David L. Ricken announced that the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help will now be known as the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. Bishop Ricken also announced that the National Shrine will begin celebrating an annual Mass with the liturgical rank of Solemnity every October 9th, and it is a great place for U.S. pilgrimage. And now for Catholic Pub Trivia. So Michael talked last week about the miraculous image from Genazzano, Italy, and you can check out the audio archives at ewtn.com/radio to hear that fascinating interview. And the question was, what is the only miraculous image to be approved by a local bishop in the United States? And the answer is, according to Bishop Oscar Cantu, the bronze weeping image of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Hobbs, New Mexico in 2018 was without natural explanation. And if you got that question right, congratulations. And this week's trivia question. So we're going to be talking today about the Virgin Mary in green. So the question is, in what apparition does Mary give a green scapular? In what apparition does Mary give a green scapular? If you think you know the answer, send Michael an email through his website, miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. So good luck to you. Now, coming up this hour, we'll be having 365 Days with Mary Project. We'll be talking about Blessed Virgin of Gyara. We have Might Be Saint of the Day. We'll be talking about Blessed Hannah Helena Czernowska. And we'll have a question of the day. Can non-saints be declared doctors of the church? All that. Plus, we have two special guests this hour. Andre Garrigo, director of a brand new film on St. Joseph called A Father's Heart, Miracles of St. Joseph Today, and Sister Emanuela Edwards from the Missionaries of Divine Revelation. And she's going to be talking about the Virgin of Revelation. So right now we need to take a short break. When we come back, Andre Garrigo, director of A Father's Heart, Miracles of St. Joseph Today. Stay tuned.
Now, back to The Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
You're listening to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, filling in for Michael O'Neill today. There's a brand new movie about St. Joseph coming out in theaters May 1st, dubbed in English, and it will show in Spanish on May 2nd. And the trailer looks amazing. I already have plans with my friends to go see it because I really believe we need to support projects like these with our attendance. And joining me today on The Miracle Hunter is the director of the film, Andre Garrigo, and he's going to be talking about this wonderful new project. So welcome to the show, Andre.
Yes, very glad to be with EWTN.
Yes, we are happy to have you too. I'm so excited to see this film because I really believe we're living right now in the age of St. Joseph and we need him more than ever. So before we talk about the film itself, let's start talking about you. You've made several films of faith, including films on subjects like Fatima, the Holy Land, Pope Francis, and the Blessed Mother. So tell us how you got into filmmaking and then what inspired you to do a film on St. Joseph.
Well, I thank you for the question because how I got into filmmaking is a miracle. And I think it's a miracle due to, well, I dare say, it's Mother Angelica, because you know, I was a journalist and never thought about doing anything audiovisual, and by chance I got to visit Alabama and Mother Angelica in Irondale when she was still at full power in the shows, and I said, well, I think this is. I was impressed by all of the apostolate that's done there through the satellites and all that, and I decided to leave the newspaper, a financial paper in which I was, and start doing something for Mother Angelica, for EWTN. But in fact, this evolved later into another sort of production, which is called Goya Producciones, but centered in apostolate and things like, you know, the ones you mentioned. And that's how I got into that. And we've been progressing, and you mentioned some of the films, but in fact, we did, I don't know how many, 100 or 200 programs for EWTN in the early 20s, in the 2000, since 2000. And finally, I got into St. Joseph because another little miracle. I didn't think it was possible to do it because it was so silent and so little in the gospel about him. But then I came across this book by Father Donald Colloway. We had been examining other sources, but that was a very good source to find places where he was honored and all these shrines that we never knew about. So we started a trip around the world to find out more about St. Joseph, and that's how it started.
I'm glad you mentioned Father Donald Calloway. I did see in the trailer that he is in the film, and of course, as you mentioned, he authored recently that book, Consecration to St. Joseph. And I agree with you, Andre. It is such a great compilation of everything we know about St. Joseph, you know, since he never spoke a word in the Gospels, there's little about him, but there's been a lot of teaching and tradition that have, you know, circled around him. So that's such a great source. I know we read the book, we made the consecration. And as I said at the beginning, I really think we're living in the age of St. Joseph and he's powerful. So I'm excited to see that Father Donald Calloway has also, you know, participated in this film. What does St. Joseph mean to you personally?
Well, for me, he's an example of all the Christian virtues, but he's mainly the greatest saint after Our Lady. But in fact, he's the patron of so many things, including the patron of the church, which is in so much need. The Catholic Church needs a strong protector now. He's the patron of workers, of the dying. That is one thing we found in Rome. There is a shrine, a temple dedicated to the dying, and that was a special devotion to Saint Joseph there. And he's so many things at the same time, but I think the fatherhood is one feature that is more important today, because the authority of the father is neglected and even attacked today, and there is so much danger for the family nowadays, and he's the protector of the Holy Family. So he's, and we found that as many people as we ask, they all were in gratitude to Saint Joseph. They were thankful to him because nobody had a prayer rejected or refused. And there are so many examples that we were really astonished to find how active he is, as you said.
Right. And you're right that he has, first of all, so many titles. You mentioned some of them: protector of the church, patron of the dying, patron of families, protector of workers. I love terror of demons. Yes. Love that title. But you're right. Family is under attack. Fatherhood under attack. The church is under attack. And, and so there's a lot of evil out there. So he is such a great patron to be yes. putting in. For, so we have to call on him. I was so moved several years ago when his name was finally added to the words, the prayers around consecration at Mass that were not just the Blessed Mother, but Saint Joseph as well, as being invoked in those prayers on the altar at Mass. And that's just, I think, again, telling so much about this age we're living in. And I love the angle of your movie, that rather than just a biography of Saint Joseph, that you're talking about miracles that are credited to Saint Joseph that are happening in our present day. And that's, of course, such a theme for this particular show, The Miracle Hunter. How did you actually go about finding these stories?
Well, the stories, first of all, by traveling, if you get to one of these big sanctuaries, shrines like the one in Cotignac, we started making interviews one after the other. And so we found that some of them were very, very interesting. For instance, one communist, son of communists and very extremely revolutionary, he was an atheist. And by chance, he appeared in this shrine. And Saint Joseph took the initiative to give him a special grace, and he fell in on his knees, started crying, and he was converted. In this same sanctuary, we met Father Dumoulin, who was a missionary in the former Soviet Union for about 20 years, and he had a very good story in Georgia, not Atlanta, Georgia, in the States, but in the fatherland of Stalin, the Soviet dictator. And there, the Orthodox have the monopoly. And he wanted to build a church. He could not. The government was against. He tried then to rebuild an old Catholic church, which was destroyed. And the government denied. And finally, he prayed to Saint Joseph, and everything was arranged. He rebuilt the church, and even the young boy who had accompanied him to visit the ruins became a priest and said the mass there. And a number of other miracles. So one after the other, you see, it's impossible to stop this chain, unless you go away. The other one, the biggest in the world, in Montreal, Canada, the Oratory of Saint Joseph, and that is very impressive. Well, at that time there was this COVID, this pandemic, and it was forbidden to travel from abroad. And so thanks to the Knights of Columbus and local television, we could do it online. And we got testimonies of people. It was a lady who was very important in the government and who was in depression and about to commit suicide. And then, the sanctuary, which was next door, exerted some kind of influence. She was completely cured of this all these ills, including his atheism. In Italy, we remember this Tuscany place where there is this convent of nuns, and every one of the nuns had some miracle to tell about Saint Joseph. And I remind one Brazilian who said when we were at the novices, and they had to find a bigger house for the children that had their school. And they asked every child what kind of house would they like to have. And then one said, well, one with rabbits, the other one with a pool, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, the result was that St. Joseph gave them the house with every little detail that children had asked for, including the one who said, well, and that it be for free. And it resulted that the diocese, who was the owner, said, okay, you can have it for free. So some of these things are funny, but St. Joseph has some sense of humor.
Yes.
It's quite amazing.
And I think this will resonate with people. I think people are looking for miracles in their lives. They're looking for something more than the world is offering them, and I think this is going to really attract them. What are your hopes for the film, Andre?
Well, we hope that this makes a lot of conversions and miracles. That is a way to have more people to ask him, because it's so unknown. It's like a forgotten gold mine that nobody knows about. And it's a mine that gives gold, never runs out. So if you go and ask him, as Saint Teresa said, he will never refuse this. And we hope also that one of the features we didn't mention about St. Joseph is his purity. His purity is mm-hmm. a weapon against the filth and the perversion of the devil. The number one sin today seems to be impurity. That was already told in Fatima.
Yes.
All impurity includes all kinds of wrongs like pedophilia, cohabitation, contraception, abortion, and all this goes together with that. And he's the most chaste human being that ever has been, and chaste and humble. And those are the two virtues that Satan hates. That's why he's the terror of demons, because he's pure and he's humble. I think, and that these are the virtues that are lacking in our world today.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking with Andre Garrigo. He is the director of a brand new film that's coming out May 1st. It's called A Father's Heart, Miracles of St. Joseph Today. So and it's a very limited showing, so we want you to get out to the theaters. So talk about, you know, the fact that St. Joseph is a universal saint, of course, for the Universal Church. How is this message, how are you going to bring this out in terms of languages to movie viewers?
Well, we have, first of all, the Spanish version, which is going into Latin America these days. And also we have the English version, of course, and we'll get one in German and Italian. It's spreading all over. I think it's a good sign that people are looking for hope, and it's so familiar, it's so easy. Even the Pope, dedicates a special year to St. Joseph.
Yes.
And he's one of the many who write little notes and on paper and put them at the feet of the statue of St. Joseph, and asking him for graces. And the next day or so, well, they get the thing done. He said that in one of his trips to America, to the Philippines. And it's on the meme, on the movie. It makes people laugh because he tells us in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The release date, I was going to ask about the release date for the film, is appropriately May 1st. Of course, that's the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker, one of his many titles. Is that where it's being released, you know, worldwide, wherever it's going to play, it will be on May 1st? Is that the intention?
Well, I must say that May 2nd is also the same thing for the Spanish-speaking. It's in Spanish, but with English subtitles, so some English-speaking wants to see it in the original with subtitles, he can go on May 2nd. And the hope is that some of the theaters, as many as possible, will take note of the success and will program the film for more times.
That's right. If we get a good turnout, you're right. They will extend that showing. And so we definitely want you to check out this film, A Father's Heart, Miracles of St. Joseph, today. And you don't really have to be Catholic to watch this film, do you, Andre?
No, because St. Joseph is in the Gospel, is in the Bible. So it's the father of every human being. He will do miracles for non-believers, too, if they just let him work on them. If one is humble enough to ask him things, is very, very generous with all the who have a little bit of humility and who want to become better, a better man, a better father, or whatever, or better mother too, because the family is too. I think one feature, if you let me, is that I didn't remember, but I knew that. But it's amazing now that Saint Joseph appeared in Fatima too in the last day, the last
apparition
in the October 13, when the sun danced. He was blessing the world together with Our Lady and the infant Jesus. That was for a few moments, but the viewers saw it, and that meant that the Holy Family was blessing the world, and that he participated of all the message, which means that my Immaculate Heart will triumph, which means that since the Immaculate Heart of Mary is one with the heart of Joseph, so both hearts will triumph at the end of all these troubles we have.
That's right.
In our world. Hmm?
That's right.
It's the final message.
Yes. So it's so timely, so timely. So again, we've been talking with Andre Garrigo. He is the director of the film, again, A Father's Heart, Miracles of St. Joseph. Today, Fathom Events is releasing this movie in select theaters nationwide, in English on May 1st, in Spanish May 2nd. Where can people find out more about your work in this particular film, Andre?
Where the people can find more is in the stjosephthemovie.com. I think that's the place where you can get all the information about the cinemas, where you can find it, you can book and everything.
Wonderful. Well, we really appreciate you joining us today. We pray that many hearts will be stirred by this brand new film. God bless you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and good. Goodbye.
We need to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to try to answer the question of the week. Stay tuned.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, filling in for Michael O'Neill today. So, the question of the week, which is sent in by a listener. You know, Michael loves getting your questions. People write in from all around the world asking about miracles happening either in today's world or centuries ago. And here's the question that came in this week. It says, Dear Miracle Hunter, I have heard people talking about declaring the late Pope Emeritus, Pope Benedict XVI, a doctor of the church. Is this a separate process from the canonization process? Does one have to be canonized saint first before being declared a doctor of the church? Thank you, Sarah. And boy, that is a great question. You know, there's currently 37 doctors of the church from the East, the West. They're men, they're women. By definition, a doctor of the church is a person whose teaching on the faith has been deemed sound and a benefit to the church through their writing, study, or research. And along with their theological contribution, the person must also display a high degree of sanctity, which is why all church doctors are also canonized saints, to answer Sarah's very good question. And since Sarah mentioned Pope Benedict specifically, you know, there is a normal 5-year waiting period before a cause for canonization is opened. And Pope Benedict, of course, died in December 2022, so we'll have to wait that for that 5-year period if that process is going to begin. And it's important to note that 4 popes prior to Benedict have been canonized: John Paul II, John Paul VI, John the 23rd, and Pope Pius X. Plus, Pope Pius XII is venerable, and John Paul I is blessed. So canonization for Benedict, you know, the 16th is certainly possible. And as far as him becoming doctor of the church, he made some substantial contributions to theology and Catholic thought. He was a prolific writer, a lecturer, and even before he was elected pope in 2005. And many regard him as the most important theologian of the 20th century, and one whose scholarship is going to stand the test of time. So, you know, in fact, no pope has written as much as Benedict. So we're just going to have to wait and see how Rome will remember this great leader. And now it's time for 365 Days with Mary. For April 29th, we're going to be talking about Blessed Virgin of Gyara. So on this day, in the year 1596, a young 17-year-old boy named Marcino, who was dumb from birth, obtained the ability to speak when he was praying before the image of the Blessed Virgin of Gyara. The miracle took place in the small town of Reggio Emiliana, Italy, and the event caused a remarkable rising of the faithful. A few days later, there were several miracles obtained through the intercession of the Blessed Virgin of Gyara, consisting in regaining speech and hearing. And pilgrimages ensued. Pope Clement VIII approved the miracle and the pilgrimages in a letter 3 months later, and there is a beautiful church commemorating the Virgin of Gyara that still stands in the town of Reggio Emiliana. Now it's time for Sainthood News. So at the end of last month, the Holy Father Pope Francis received in audience His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro. He is the prefect for the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints. And during that audience, the Pope recognized the heroic virtues of a priest, 3 women religious, and 2 lay women. And among them, now recognized as servant of God, is Maria do Monte Piera, and she's born in Madeira Island, Portugal, on April 10, 1897, to a family of 10 children. And her parents died when she was just 17, and 2 years later, she expressed a desire to join a religious congregation, but faced strong objection from her family since she had younger siblings to care for. So she remained at home as a caregiver, and 10 years later, requested permission again to join the Congregation of the Hospitaller Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And there she was accepted. She would devote her life to caring for the sick. She entered that order in 1929, stayed there till her death in 1963, and was known to have some deep mystical experiences and intimacy with Jesus. Her life is an eloquent testimony to the fact that the charism of hospitality is a road to holiness. Our next segment, They Might Be Saints. This segment of the show connects with Michael's weekly EWTN series, They Might Be Saints, about individuals on the path to sainthood and their search for canonization miracles. As the show says, from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue, these are the people who make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And you can watch They Might Be Saints Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN. And for more information, look up theymightbesaints.com. We try to find servants of God, venerables and blesseds, and see whose feast day or death anniversary lines up with today's date on the calendar. And for today, we have Blessed Hannah Helena Szynowska. And she was born October 7th, 1902 in Warsaw, Poland, and she died 1973. And she was a laywoman in the Diocese of Krakow, Poland. And it's interesting, one side of her family was Catholic and the other side was Protestant. And so religious involvement at home was kind of low as a result of that. She did attend an Ursuline high school and helped care for soldiers wounded and injured in the Bolshevik Revolution. and then began studies in nursing in Warsaw, Poland in 1920. She also went to France on scholarship and worked with members of the Red Cross there. And she became a nurse in a time when the profession was not really respected as it is today, and became a leading light in her field. She was an instructor at the University of Nurses and Hygienists in Krakow, an editor of a monthly publication called Nurse Poland. She worked for the Catholic Association of Polish Nurses, actually helped form that organization. She was a member of the Oblates of the Order of St. Benedict. And during World War II, she organized nurses for home care in Warsaw and helped feed and resettle war refugees. After that, she headed up a nursing home. She was the director of psychiatric nursing in Kobierz in Poland until the communists closed that facility. And really, up until the end of the life, she nursed the poor and the neglected in her own parish before finally succumbing to cancer in 1973. And on April 28th, 2018, she was beatified by Pope Francis. What a great story. Now we need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Sister Emanuela Edwards from the Missionaries of Divine Revelation, talking about the Virgin of Revelation. Stay tuned for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN. I'm Elizabeth Bigicelli, filling in for Michael O'Neill today. So Sister Emanuela Edwards, originally from England, is a religious from the Missionaries of Divine Revelation. They are based in Rome, and their charism is to be missionary in the third millennium to bring the gospel of the Lord to the world. They're often referred to in Rome as the green nuns. You can see them wearing green habits and giving official tours in the Vatican museums as one of their many apostolates. They have a devotion to Our Lady, particularly in the form of the Virgin of Revelation, who also wore green. We're going to be talking about that apparition today. So welcome, Sister Emanuela.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
and I love her accent. You know, Sister, I have written and spoken on numerous Marian apparitions, but I have to say that this one is a newer one for me, and I bet it will be the same for our listeners. So I'm looking forward to kind of talking to you today about this apparition, sort of step by step, and particularly focusing on what the Virgin said in this particular event. So first, if you will, can you kind of describe the visionary in this apparition? Because he was rather an interesting character, wasn't he?
Yes. I mean, Bruno Conacciolo was an anti-clerical Protestant who, you know, had this deep hatred, if you like, of the Catholic Church. And indeed, when he was participating in the Spanish Civil War, he developed the intent to kill Pope Pius XII. And when he was in Toledo, he bought a dagger. And on it, he wrote, "Death to the Pope." So he was in, when he returned to Rome, he had this intention in his heart to actually kill Pope Pius XII. And so he was the visionary who saw Our Lady. And I think this is the first time Our Lady has ever appeared to a Protestant as well. So the apparition is of note for that reason too.
And I thought in my notes, I thought I had read that he was actually originally a Catholic, but a fallen away Catholic. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. I mean, he was baptized and mm-hmm. he received his first communion. He grew up on the streets of Rome. He used to sleep on the steps of the Scala Santa. And one day he met this woman who seemed to invite him for something to eat. So being hungry, you know, he followed his stomach, if you like, and she had the intention of teaching the truths of the faith. And so he started to attend the classes for the catechism. And so, along with a number of other boys who lived on the streets, he actually made his first communion. But after that event, he returned home, and he was coming home with lots of good intentions to his own mother. And when he saw his mum, he apologized for an argument that they'd had a few nights before. And she gave him a smack. And with that, he threw the rosary beads at his mother. And then that was the end of his religious devotion at that time.
Wow.
But
You know, I think it's unusual that Our Lady would appear to, first of all, non-Catholic, but one who was persecuting the church and persecuting her, too.
Yes. In fact, this is one of the things, you know, and in fact, Bruno later in his life asked Our Lady, why did she choose him? And she told him, because there was no one worse.
Kind of like Satan. like the Lord chose St. Paul, right? He was out there persecuting too.
And in fact, that's exactly the point, because Our Lady appeared at Tre Fontane, which is the place where St. Paul was actually beheaded. And so we can say in this apparition that Our Lady appeared to a new persecutor of the church in our time. And you know, when she first spoke to Bruno, she says, you persecute me, return to the pure fount of the gospel. And so this you persecute me is, it resounds what our Lord said to Saul in the gospel. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?
That's right. Go ahead. I was going to say that the location you just mentioned in English would be translated to Three Fountains, I believe, and that's right there. Yeah. In Rome. So when Bruno was there that day, he wasn't alone. He was with his children, you know, who were playing in a park. And actually, they were actually the first to see her. Is that correct?
Yes. Divine Providence. You know, the children were playing ball and he was busy writing a speech against Our Lady. And by Divine Providence, the ball went missing. And so one by one, He found them knelt before this grotto saying, beautiful lady, beautiful lady, beautiful lady. And at first Bruno thought it was a game, and so he was getting a little bit irritated, as you can imagine. And in the end he tried to move them, but they were like marble. And so at that point he got afraid and he said, God help us. And with this it was as if two hands came towards him to remove the scales from his eyes. And he too saw the beautiful lady. But unlike his children didn't hear her speak. They only saw her, whereas Bruno spoke to Our Lady that day on the 12th of April 1947 for over an hour.
And what did she look like, and how did she identify herself?
Yes, Our Lady identified herself properly. She said, I am the Virgin of Revelation. And she appeared with a green mantle, a white dress tied with a rose-coloured sash around the waist. And she was holding the Bible, the Book of Revelation. And so, unlike many other apparitions where she appears holding her son, this time she appeared holding the Bible to a Protestant who was using the Bible against Our Lady. And so, you know, she said, I am the Virgin of Revelation. And so Our Lady always indicates her son. And of course, he is the Word made flesh. He is the divine revelation itself. And so by showing us the Bible, she indicates the importance of the Word of God being properly that, the Word of God.
She even goes as far as saying, return to the pure source of the gospel. You know, yes. So she kind of gets right in on him about his attacks on the church, you know.
Because Bruno was, you know, like many Protestants, were very, very, very well instructed on the Bible text, but they don't read it within the tradition of the church, and very often, you know, they can use it in order to quote and not believe the truths of the faith. As we've always believed it through the centuries. And so Our Lady really was calling everyone back to this pure font, to the font to believe as we've always believed. And that's the important thing in this particular apparition. Of course, appearing in Rome as well, where there is the teaching seat, if you like, of the Holy Father as well. So Our Lady said during the apparition, the true church of my son is founded on three white loaves, the Eucharist, the Immaculate Virgin Mary, and the Holy Father, which is the teaching tradition of the church.
She also promised something miraculous, and it had to do with the dirt. Sometimes there's a spring in an apparition, you know, like in Lourdes and so forth, but there was something about the dirt in that location.
Yes, that's right. Our Lady said, with this soil of sin, I will work great miracles for the conversion of unbelievers and sinners. And so just as at Lourdes, you know, the water that was given this these healing properties, Our Lady blessed the water with her presence in Lourdes. Mm-hmm. At Tre Fontane, she blessed the soil, and this was, you know, very similar to Massa Biel in the sense that it was a place of sin. It was a place where prostitutes would go. It wasn't a nice, clean, secluded grotto. It was a place of sin, and Our Lady appeared there and blessed it with many, many graces. And that is one of the features, in fact, of this apparition, because very, very quickly afterwards, the miracle started. And so by the December, so the apparition started in the April, and by the December there was over 100 quoted miracles from the soil. And so this has been one of the defining things with the apparition at Tre Fontane, the very many graces Our Lady has granted. And, you know, we can quote stories of physical cures. The first one was a man, Carlo Mancuso, who fell down a lift shaft. And after placing the soil from the grotto on him, he was able to walk, although the x-rays shows his bones never healed.
Wow.
We have miracles like that. We have miracles, the healing in families, the those who have returned to the faith thanks to this great apparition. And so many, many miracles of all types. So Our Lady has shown her presence by lots of graces, which, of course, always serve to bring us back closer to God.
And another interesting thing I was finding about this particular revelation is she makes a prophecy about her Assumption. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, I mean, this is very, very interesting because 12 months before, Pope Pius XII had issued a letter to everyone in the church asking to pray for some heavenly confirmation whether he should proclaim the dogma of the Assumption. When Our Lady appeared at Tre Fontane, she said, "I could not decay, I did not decay, because I am immaculate. My Son and the angels took me to heaven." So with these words, she gave that heavenly confirmation that Pope Pius XII had sought. And so, as we know, this message was taken to the Holy Father. And indeed, on the 1st of November 1950, he did indeed proclaim the dogma of the Assumption. And so this was considered very, very important.
And again, I mean, this just kind of points to God's sense of humor to me, because I think here is this guy, Bruno, who was setting about to attack the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, and he has this apparition where he basically ushers in the dogma of the Assumption.
Yeah.
So you kind of see the irony in all of this.
Yes, in fact. And, you know, it's a very, very important dogma. And I think it's one as well that, in a way, you know, the Protestants in many ways can often accept the dogma of the Immaculate Conception, but the dogma of the Assumption they never accept. And so the Church proclaiming this dogma is also a sign, if you like, in that regard as well.
We're chatting with Sister Emanuela Edwards from the Missionaries of Divine Revelation, talking about Our Lady of Revelation, an apparition that occurred. And Sister, on the 33rd anniversary of the Virgin's visit, a public miracle occurred at that location. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I mean, that's one of the incredible things, that on that day, thousands of people saw the sun spin, similar to what was seen in Fatima in 1917. And so on that day, during the Holy Mass for the anniversary, they had to actually stop the Holy Mass because the sun was making such a dance, if you like, over the place where the Mass was being celebrated. And so this obviously did a lot to spread notice about the apparition. amid our Lady's presence felt, and indeed very often on the time of the apparition, people do talk about seeing the sun thin in the sky.
And that was remarkable when I read about that, because, you know, certainly we've heard that happened at Fatima, but I had no idea that would really be called like a theophany, where it happens to many people at once, that there was this miracle even occurring again, I think, 2 years later. So again, it's like, what does God need to do to get our attention, right, sister?
Yeah. I mean, the whole event was reported to the Vatican at the same time. It was prophesied beforehand, actually, also by Bruno. Our Lady has a very, very strong message, if you like. Sometimes it's also a little bit insensible sometimes to the many, many apparitions of our Lady in these days. I think there's a lot to be said for a certain insensibility, if you like, in some cases.
Sure. So hopefully, you know, as people are learning about this event, their hearts will be changed. Obviously, Bruno's heart was changed as a result of this. I know that he would then, after this, devote his life to, you know, promoting the truth. He was catechizing fallen away Catholics and non-Catholics and Catholic youth, you know, so that they could be armed with the truth and not taken, you know, in by the errors that were found in his day throughout our days. I know he has passed away. But, you know, I was curious, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, sister, but you know, his children who saw her too, they're probably still alive. Have they ever spoken publicly about the apparition since they were there?
Yeah, I mean, what I can say is Bruno was such a charismatic figure, but during his lifetime, and of course, it used to be Bruno who would always conduct the testimonies, and his children always remained somewhat withdrawn from that side of it, obviously to have a private life of their own. Since his death, there's been one or two interviews, but they're not at all. They don't have Bruno's same charism. They're much, much more reserved. The little one, Jim Franco, who's mentioned quite a lot in the account of the apparition on the 12th of April, you know, whenever I've spoke to him, I always say, tell me, what is it like to have seen the Virgin Mary? And he always says, I don't remember anything. And then he starts to talk about it. It's quite fascinating, but he would only ever speak, you know, one-to-one. I knew him personally, and so he's not someone who would do a recount in front of a stage or many people. It would always be a private thing. Of course, he's now aging and his health is beginning to wane. Isola, she was actually at the grotto this last week or so for the anniversary. So we saw her there, and she's still in good health, but she doesn't make a public show. She's a very, very humble and very prayerful person. Wow. But she doesn't like her. She doesn't like a personal show in any way. She agreed to have a photograph, but it's a private photograph that was taken. It's not for publication, if you like.
Yes, yeah. And I think that just shows the humility. So that is actually speaks well. So if someone wanted to go on a pilgrimage to, and say it again, in how they say it in Italy, the Three Fountains, what's the location
Tre
called?
Fontane.
Tre Fontane.
Tre Fontane. Yeah.
And it is right in Rome?
Yes. You simply take line B on the metro to Via Laurentina, and it's exactly opposite where St. Paul was martyred, the Tre Fontane, but it is indicated. It's a very simple 10-minute walk from the metro stop right to the grotto. It's very, very simple to find it. And there's directions now, Google directions. You can find them on our website, anybody who wants to go.
Give us your website, sister.
Yes, www.mdrevelation.org.
Okay. And again, it's the Virgin of Revelations. You can look up online more about that. So Sister Emmanuelle Edwards, it was such a joy talking to you about this apparition and the effects it's still having in hearts and minds of people. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful interview.
All right. God bless. Thanks for joining us.
God bless. Bye.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this episode or you want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guests for today's show, Sister Emmanuelle Edwards, Missionaries of the Divine Revelation, and Andre Garrigo, the director of A Father's Heart, The Miracles of St. Joseph Today. And don't forget to check out Michael's new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. That's published by Tan Books and available at ewtnrc.com. Again, I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli. Michael will be back next week, but meanwhile, it's been a joy to spend this time with you today. Again, you can find more about my writing, speaking, and media work and voiceover work at my website, elizabethficicelli.com. Finally, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on The Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you are a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Have a great week. God bless.